It's been quite tricky to assess the balance between ministers understanding that they still have an obligation to adhere to the constitution that gives effect to the Bill of Rights while also implementing the lockdown regulations and rules. That impression has also been reflected in some of what I have been reading and observing.
Welcome to the Conversation with Democracy podcast, where we uncover the successes and challenges of initiatives underway to build democracies in Africa. My name is Liz Letebele, and this podcast is brought to you by Democracy Works Foundation. Join us to find out about our work with our partners to build inclusive, equitable, and sustainable consensus democracy. In other words, democracies that work. This podcast series spotlights the work of the Civil Society Participation in Provincial Legislatures project that seeks to build bridges between local civil society and provincial legislatures. My name is Liz Letebele, and this podcast is brought to you by Democracy Works Foundation. COVID-19 has fundamentally touched almost every aspect of our social, economic, private, and political lives. From a governance point of view, the regulations implemented in terms of the Disaster Management Act have greatly increased the powers of the executive branch of government. Nompumelelo Runji is a political analyst working with the Democracy Works Foundation on the Civil Society Participation in Provincial Legislature project. This project aims to bring civil society organizations and provincial legislatures closer together. During the pandemic, the project team has been working on identifying how provincial legislatures and CSOs can collaborate in addressing the impacts of the pandemic in rural areas in the Northwest, the Northern Cape, and Limpopo.
There's a lot of behind the scenes and closed doors meetings that are happening that the press and the public are not privy to. And that's one of the things that I've been raising alarm over, to say that's one of the things that actually tend to undermine our democracy, in the sense that the lack of transparency around decision-making. And I think our project has been advocating for the fact that we need to have these processes happen within provincial legislatures, within the committees, even of parliament. Even though there have been virtual committee meetings and some of the ministers have been called to answer questions, it hasn't been that wide or broadly disseminated.
Section 26 of the Disaster Management Act of 2002 confers primary responsibility in coordinating the response to and management of a national disaster on the national executive. But these do not preclude the responsibilities of local and provincial government. The executive also remains accountable to the legislature, even in the execution of its authority under the Disaster Management Act, both at the national and provincial levels. In this episode, we look at how this has affected our human rights, the media, and the political landscape. At the beginning of lockdown, the National Defence Force was deployed across the country to enforce regulations. The drastic action of deploying the military in a non-conflict situation among civilians raises some concerns.
This is, of course, a very extreme thing to do, and it shows the seriousness of the situation in terms of how the executive deems the coronavirus pandemic, and in terms of trying to ensure that society and various communities actually adhere to the regulations, particularly that of staying at home. They've seen it fit to not only extend the mandates of police in terms of their, you know, visible policing, but also to bring in the National Defence Force. And so you've seen that this has had a triggering effect if you look at some of the interactions that have happened between some of the members of the Defence Force, National Defence Force, and community members. The most prominent, of course, has been the killing of Mr. Khosa, who was killed by members of the National Defence Force, and now his family are taking the forces to court and are attempting to sue. Of course, it's been to the Constitutional Court as well to say that there has to be a review of the code of conduct of the Defence Force in terms of how it is that it interacts with civilians under such circumstances. And more so in townships, where those images actually bring up the past and images of what life used to be under apartheid, where you used to have the deployment of the Defence Force going in there, but not to protect lives, not to ensure that people are safe, but to actually inflict harm. And so for a lot of people in those contexts and in those situations, it has just triggered trauma from the past. And so we've seen earlier on in the lockdown where the deployment happened, you saw a lot of young people, young men retaliate against the men and the women in uniform and not embrace them within their communities, but see them as an antagonistic presence. And so the interactions that we saw in a lot of social media videos, where videos went viral of you know, these interactions, as well as, of course, members of the forces actually making people do certain types of undignified things, sort of cement their authority, or, you know, make a point about their authority in those communities. And we've seen that it has had an effect of undermining the trust in institutions.
Of course, not all of us are affected equally by the police brutality and the brutality by the police force, which I think is also important to point out, that it's a very, the experience of that is very different along racial lines in South Africa, as these things, you know, often tend to be. And also, you know, with regards to the issue around police and military brutality, you know, again, there, the role of democratic processes are so important. And the People's Coalition comes to mind, C19 People's Coalition comes to mind, that has made a submission to National Parliament to require also oversight and accountability for some of these very severe human rights violations.
Media and communication, of course, play vital roles in how people can hold government to account. Has there been repression of the media or civil society during the time of COVID-19?
Media has actually been accommodated. When you look at the different press briefings that have been held around the lockdown regulations, when you look at the fact that media has been deemed an essential service during the lockdown, meaning that media services have not been stopped. Radio stations continue to function. Journalists continue to go and cover stories. Of course, they have to adhere to the same protocols in terms of social distancing, in terms of wearing masks, etc. But I wouldn't say there's been widespread curtailment of that kind of activity. We've seen a lot of coverage. We've seen even critical coverage. Questions being asked about the role of the National Coronavirus Command Council, for instance, and the powers of the council. Those interactions around getting the executive to justify to the public how it is that they come to certain decisions have been very tricky interactions. The other thing that has been quite interesting to note is the fact that the president does not do press conferences. He just does announcements, and there's no opportunity for the press to actually engage him and interact with him and ask questions. That role he delegates to his ministers. And so that has also, I think, been a major challenge in terms of who gets to access the president, who gets to influence the decision-making, who gets to put arguments and ask questions about the decisions that are being made.
So I wanted to touch briefly on government rhetoric and government communication, I suppose. Has government been creating an enabling environment for the undermining of democracy by means of its communication, to your mind?
Well, Well, I think you've just got to focus on some of the members of cabinet, some of the ministers. For instance, I think when it comes to the law and order aspect of the regulations and what we've been hearing, for instance, from the Minister of Police, does sometimes create the impression that, you know, there's license for police, there's license for the military to, you know, shirk or undermine or disregard the rights of civilians. In terms of saying that we as civilians have the and society, world society, have the responsibility to almost just, you know, unquestioningly obey the police and the military, and not to talk about or ask them questions about what regulations they're using, what they're basing their actions on in terms of whether we've been stopped or we've been told not to do certain things or not to go to certain places.
There have been concerns raised about how the National Coronavirus Command Council has interpreted and exercised its powers under the Disaster Management Act. As such, it is necessary to emphasize the preeminence of the Constitution, even under these unprecedented circumstances.
There hasn't been a suspension of the Constitution, you know, and so police and military still have to conduct themselves within the limitations of the Constitution. And yet sometimes when you hear some of the rhetoric coming out of the National Coronavirus Command Council, it's almost as if there's a misconstrual of the context to mean that there's a suspension of the Constitution. And so that's why even the whole issue of them being willing to substantiate the decision making, it's almost as if to say, no, this is an emergency situation. We get to make the decisions because we know what's best for society, but that's not how it works. Society needs to continue to have a say, and we can only hold our government to account if they are answerable and continue to uphold the principle of transparency and accountability. If that fails, and if the oversight function of ensuring that that accountability continues to happen, if all of that fails, then we have a serious problem, because then there's nobody who's going to ensure that the public interest is defended. And so for me, that has been my main concern around how government has been talking about, even for instance, the issue around, again, around the tobacco, around alcohol, around certain things that have to do around what is allowed to be sold in shop. I think what we need to be doing more of is educating people. If I think government spends more time educating people around the harm that smoking does and how it interacts with the COVID disease, then we'd have a better response.
I do sometimes feel like I'm being treated like a naughty child and also monitored as such. And, you know, I think what's interesting is the kind of response that invokes in people. It does not exactly invoke a response of responsible collaboration. I think it more, in many cases, the responses include, you know, emotions from rebellion to disbelief to complete disregard.
The COVID-19 pandemic has also had an impact on the political landscape. This is particularly significant because in 2021, South Africa is set to hold local government elections, meaning that in 2020, political parties are gearing themselves to campaign and compete. In other ways, the pandemic has increased the potential for politicians, political parties, and other actors to take advantage of the situation.
With regards to political opportunism, have political parties or individual politicians or other political actors been seen to undermine democracy in their endeavor or maybe in their endeavors to profit from the crisis? And is there a shift in focus by the state and citizenry?
And so we've seen that it has given quite an advantage to the incumbents. And when I say incumbents here, I'm talking about the African National Congress, obviously, which runs national government and runs the 8 provinces. And then we've got the Democratic Alliance in the Western Cape that runs the province there. And so they, because they are at the forefront of responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, they have a lot of airtime. They get to interact with the media more. Their decisions hold a lot more weight. And so they're more visible to the public. That's the one side of it. So the opposition parties, and particularly the smaller parties, who can't afford, for instance, to call press conferences and all sorts of things, they are at a disadvantage at this time. And so that is really problematic in terms of fair competition between different political parties and what it will do for the electorate in terms of who they have as top of mind when they go to vote next year. But the other more concerning part has been the use of food parcels for patronage and to basically reward certain people within communities because they support certain individuals within council, or they support specific political parties, or they have membership to certain political parties. And so other community members then don't receive what they're supposed to receive, which is their rights as citizens. But also in terms of procurement processes as well, because this is an emergency situation, procurement processes have not been transparent, and obviously things have not been going through council. Things have just been ordered and bought, and things have been given to companies that have not been vetted, that have not been publicly advertised. And that is also leading to corrupt practices. But what we also need to watch out for is all these things that we've been talking about that have led to state capture under the Fifth Administration and President Jacob Zuma. We are at risk of repeating the same, because we are using the COVID-19 pandemic has been used as a way of getting around these processes. And I think we may end up having to have another judicial commission of inquiry to find out what happened during this period. If oversight is not conducted, if civil society is not active and vigilant around these issues.
Despite the challenges that have arisen because of the COVID-19 pandemic, there are opportunities for civil society organizations to work towards strengthening the pillars of democracy.
I mean, there are also questions around how the disaster regulation can be extended. For instance, is there involvement of parliament to those extensions? And, you know, I think civil society does need to keep a very careful eye on those kind of developments to make sure that this does not become the new normal in the functioning of governance. And I mean, with that in mind, what do you think are some of the strategic considerations an organization like Democracy Works Foundation or others that are active in this space should take going forward during the COVID pandemic, but also beyond?
I think what Democracy Works Foundation is already doing in terms of these kinds of initiatives like podcasts, putting out articles and adapting. I think Democracy Works Foundation has done such a great job of adapting its projects into a virtual environment and remaining relevant in this context. I think another thing that organizations like Democracy Works can do is leverage on relationships that you already have at the political level, you know, to ensure that you continue to have access to what's happening behind the scenes that may not be available to the public. We don't actually know who gets the ear of the president. And if we could leverage on our links a lot more, leverage on our relationships a lot more, as well as to advocate for the interests not only of communities more broadly, but even of our civil society organizations, our partners on the ground, to advocate for what it is that they are going through and the challenges that they're facing. And to even bring it to the attention of the provincial legislatures that we are dealing with, as well as the attention of Parliament, so that they can put the right questions to the executive so that these things come out to the fore, onto the public record.
The civil society participation in provincial legislature project was made possible with a co-funding and technical assistance from the European Union and the Westminster Foundation for Democracy. This is Liz Letabele signing out. Please follow our channel for our conversation with democracy, as well as our website on www.democracyworksfoundation.org. Bye.